shall we move on to the next agenda? And that's the debt disclosures.
Grant, Michelle. I wanted to point out that the next two topics that Michelle is talking about are quite short on the agenda, as you can see. And the reason for that is because we wanted to, I know you don't want to do a lot of FYI, but we wanted to make you aware of the first one, and that because the staff is going to the board in March, and hopefully if the board agrees to do a project on that, we'll come back to you again. And the second one is in very, very early research phase, and we're trying to get you more involved very early in the project, so we're just giving you a quick information on that as well. Hopefully come back to you again. So that's why these sessions are so short. This is hopefully not the only time you will see these two topics. It is like a little taster, understanding you don't like the FYIs all the time.
Okay, so in October, the staff got some input from you, which they then took to the board about the possibility of including disclosures around net debt and specifically around introducing a reconciliation of net debt. When the board looked at the staff paper, they asked the staff to go away and do some more research on the requirements. And that's what we've been doing with Barbara's assistance in the last 3 months. And I thought I would give you a quick update of what we've heard. You could let me know whether that's pretty much what people were expecting us to hear. So we issued a survey, which I think we did distribute round to people in the middle of January, where we were seeking to understand the kind of disclosures that people used for debt. So respondents pretty much told us that debt was important to them, and that they looked at the analysis of the period-on-period movements in debt, and more importantly, they like to understand the items within those that period-on-period movement, including the non-cash items. And one of the things we did we wanted to really try and do was understand what it is. And why and how the information is used. So I think I've now got the first draft of my analysis, and I think we think that the feedback we've had from the survey and from various discussions we've had with other investors is that this reconciliation helps, and well, it supplements the cash flow information, so it gives a little bit more detail. Because it reconciles the movement between the two balance sheets and the profit and loss accounts, it gives investors a level of confidence in how they understand the debt. And that confidence is supported in when they're using preparing cash flow forecasts for the future. Because the data is reconciled to the other performance statements, it gives them a sort of focus and a better understanding of the exposure to risk, and enables them to identify how the sources of finance have been deployed over time. So those are the sort of key findings on debt. One of the issues that we've been trying to battle with is there isn't a net debt definition in IFRS, so there isn't a clear definition of debt. So one of the things we asked in the survey was, do you feel that you would, if the IFB didn't define debt, but we asked for additional disclosures when management defined debt, would this be sufficient for your purposes? And there wasn't broad support, but there was a sort of 60-40 response where people did accept it. One of the things we've been thinking about as staff, and we plan to explore, is whether we could ask for a reconciliation of the items that are in the financing activities section of the cash flow statement, excluding the movement on equity, because equity is already reconciled somewhere else. Then we did ask as well if there were any other disclosures around debt, and there was some feedback that quite a lot of feedback, to be fair, that analysts would like improved information about debt maturity, understanding the covenants associated with debt. So the areas of exploring risk around debt. In the second part of the survey, we followed up some of the comments that we'd had regarding cash and improving disclosures around cash. And the feedback that we got was that there was an interest in having a better understanding about cash, and particularly the cost of repatriation of cash, so the cost of moving cash across different tax jurisdictions seems to be a consideration. So in terms of the feedback that we've got, I think that's a very potted summary. We're going to back to the board next month, and what we think we'll ask the board, and we'd like your views on, is whether if we propose that we had some form of reconciliation of the items that would be classified as financing within IFRS 7, you think that would be useful for your purposes. And then we think the more qualitative disclosures that investors have identified, we think we should perhaps investigate those further, so they could be considered as part of the disclosure initiative project. Because I think there is, I think some of those disclosures could be quite difficult to make sure that we didn't end up with just boilerplate disclosures that didn't really provide additional information, but just volumes of data.
Okay.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
I think also it's important for the new members to, if you didn't know, that there is some history behind this, and so this is this kind of this net debt comment was something has been. We've been asked for this information over the past few years by some certain stakeholders. And so what the staff is trying to do is to gather information, like Michelle said, on what specific areas we might be able to provide on a relatively short-term basis to help these people get the information they need, and then step back and see if there's appetite on a longer-term basis to provide more information. So there's kind of like a staggered approach, and that's where this changes in debt has come in. So it's not ignoring the other comments. We're just trying to understand if we can address some of the short-term concerns that we've heard over the last few years, if that's going to be effective or not.
Okay. Peter.
I think reconciliation would be very helpful, but I wouldn't reconciliate from the cash flow statement. But what I'm interested in is the liabilities in particular that relates to the financial cost in the income statement. And the reason is quite simple, actually. When most analysts try to value a company, we try to pick it apart and value it on an operating earnings level before interest. And the liabilities that relates to the interest cost, or sometimes the interest net, and then we call it the net debt, those liabilities we deduct later on to get to the equity value. And if we start with an EBIT that excludes or includes items that relates what we think is interest bearing, or what we think is debt, we end up technically incorrect in the valuation. So I think to reconciliate between the financial net, which assets and liabilities that has actually given rise to interest income and interest cost in the financial net, would be helpful. The other item is that trying to calculate the cost of capital is always difficult, but one extremely difficult part is actually to understand the credit cost for the company. And of course, you can look at the financial net or the financial cost and try to divide it by the average interest-bearing debt or so, but that becomes a very, very broad calculation. So I would definitely be interested in mandatory information about the credit cost, so I can, from that, derive the credit risk premium for the company, which is very important when I do evaluation.
Robert. So on the question of debt, it would be fabulous if you could have a statement that said, this is the debt. It is going to be incredibly difficult to do that intelligently. First of all, we all know, if we're true to our hearts, that leases are debt. But there's also securitization out there that's debt. And more recently, I've come across there are some supply chain financing that is actually showing debt as accounts payable. And the definition, the reason I'm so sure is the accounts payable are being financed. There's actually an interest charge on that accounts payable paid to a bank. So A sells to B, B records it as an accounts payable, 180 days, but by the way, buried in the deal is it's actually on C's balance sheet as a loan, and C's getting interest. So it's clearly bank debt, but showing up on the financial statements as accounts payable. And that really points to, you know, it would be really nice to have debt, but you're going to have to look very hard. And oh, by the way, if you think disclosure is going to get you there, I guarantee these things are done actually. The securitization and the accounts payable I just mentioned, I guarantee they're structured so they don't show up. So, no, you know, they've worked very hard to make sure they don't have to report them. They're not going to tell you about them afterwards. The second comment to sort of be discouraging, what you're doing is good. But this is early in the process, I just wanted to sort of lay out some problems. Net debt would be fabulous. Inherently, one of the things you look at net debt is we've got some cash and we've got some assets. I'd just like to point out to you that if you've got a cash in a subsidiary, because of the way corporations work, if there's cash in a subsidiary and it hasn't moved to the central treasury, there's a reason. It's not fully countable, or it's not fully nettable. And then, but by the way, is it an asset to the parent? Yes, but how you flow it up is an interesting question. Let's say it's a subsidiary that's owned 70% and there's a 30% minority shareholder. The net debt, at very least, 30% of that money may belong to the minority shareholders, but it could be much more complex because it may also be, there may be other claims against that money. So net debt would be great. Total debt would be great. Disclosure-only solution is not going to work, and you have a terrible standard-setting problem because I don't know how to define any of this so that it couldn't be gamed.
Okay.
I strongly disagree with Robert.
Yes!
That you he's overreacting, definitely.
Which part am I overreacting to?
That it's impossible to define what is debt.
Peter, I'm creating these monsters.
Well, maybe in Canada it's impossible. But
by the way, they're not. The rest of the world, it's these possible. Are not Canadian. I'm not. These are IFRS. Well, it's not Canadian.
I guess the solution we're coming up with is we're going to propose to the ISB is that we use the definition of financing activities within IS7 because we kind of recognize the two points that you're both making, and it's clear some people think, yeah, you can define debt, and other people think, no, it's going to be a big problem.
But how would you deal with working capital? Because working capital is... Hold on.
We're not going to define working capital.
But working capital ties into debt. That's why I've told you. And yes, we shouldn't define it, but I'm putting a caution out.
We have 3 minutes left on this subject. I'd like to make a contribution as well. And that is that I think the attention for debt and cash is right. I think investors currently are not sufficiently served in understanding the debt and the cash position of a company. But the focus in the paper is on reconciliations throughout the year. And that's why I have a problem, because I much more like to have details about the photo at the end of the year, at the latest available situation, understanding that situation, than seeing, okay, there was 300 million matured this year, and we addressed it with our revolver, and then we issued a new bond, and it's 2017, and look how beautiful this all works out in a reconciliating table. I mean, that's not as relevant as providing the details about the latest available debt situation.
Reconciliation focus was about non-cash changes in debt that investors have told us they didn't have today. Like foreign exchange effects on debt,
yeah.
Like acquired debt. So that was part of the things that have come up.
I would not be able to use that input to model future debt.
Okay.
And debt is is like it's the result how your debt changes is the result of how you model your cash flows, and that's where the focus of your model is on the cash flows, operating cash flows, and the capital expenditures. And the result generally, I mean, it may differ by you can throw in a maturity schedule, but you don't model the debt flow. That's not how that's the resulting. It's not like a driver of your model. It's the result. It's part of the result of your model. Dennis.
Now, one general observation, tying partially in what Rob was saying, is that you are doing financial reporting, and the investment community is going to do financial analysis. So the question is, to what extent you, as a standard setter, should particularly think about defining items which are in the basically the eye of the beholder. So Peter has a different view on what is debt than I do, and companies will differ. So if you look at, you know, car companies, they have a financial services business. The debt income and the debt interest and expenses in a very different section of where you would find it for other companies. So I think some definition should be left with the analysts and investors rather than being captured by a standard setter.
But if you use a model that actually starts with a figure that is before interest cost, wouldn't you be interested to know which liabilities actually give rise to those interest costs? That is what I'm aiming at.
Yeah, but remember that for pensions, the income statement items are potentially captured in my operating profit. So
yeah, and that's a problem. But if if it is included in operating profit, it would not be a part of debt. But if you don't know whether it's included in operating earnings or in the interest cost part of the income statement, you might include the pension cost because you believe it is debt. So you end up on the wrong numbers. That is what I mean.
It's your view on how you treat things.
It's a fact. Either it's included or it's not. I cannot take the number.
If I do what you said exactly, if I don't know if it's included, it's the problem.
Yeah, and that is the reconciliation part that you didn't like, which I like, definitely. It would be extremely helpful to know liabilities have given rise to the interest cost in the income.
I like reconciliations. I like to know where it is. I'm just pointing out that there's some much brighter people hiding the stuff. That's all.
Well, I think. Sorry.
What Dennis is saying is a bit more fundamental, if I can say it, than what you're saying.
Yeah.
You say, I want to know what's in the interest number, and I want to know how it connects to whatever's on the balance sheet. Dennis says, I don't want to know how you define interest. Just give me all the parts and see how they connect, and I'll put together what I think is interest, and I'll put together what I think is debt. It's very different.
But I don't
and
think I
actually
this
I'm with Dennis on that one.
This is has not with what I'm interested in. It's just that I need to get the figures correct.
Yeah, no. What you're suggesting is very valuable. If you work with the number as given.
Exactly.
What Dennis says is you probably never work with the number as given to start with.
But don't you need to know what Peter wants to know in order to take it apart and do it your way?
Yeah, you do. That's why I'm saying Dennis is a little bit more fundamental. Yeah. He goes one step further.
You need what Peter wants in order to do what Dennis does.
There you go. How about that?
I think that is a brilliant. let's wrap it up on this way.
Peter wants to do it. That's your answer.
We are slightly behind schedule.